Okay, I'm going to only talk about liquid xenon. Just point out that you could, in fact, use liquid argon. And there was a study by a group in Gran Sasso to use build very large liquid argon detectors. In fact, there's even a 15-ton detector that's sitting there now that could be partially converted to this. But I'm only talking about liquid xenon. I'll mainly just try to bring you up to date about why liquid xenon is useful for WIMPs and some studies that have been carried out over the last decade. And talk about two detectors, which is running now and being built, and talk about some other detectors which people are proposing. Now, from a simple-minded sort of experimental viewpoint, we kind of like supersymmetry because it's the only model we know of that can at least in some way give you the amount of dark matter. That's the good news. The bad news is, at least from some of the theoretical calculations, you get extremely low rates. This is a result that was given to me by Leszek Wozniakowski about a year ago. He also presented this to our meeting in our dark matter meeting. And you see his preferred cross sections are enormously small, which means you have to probably build very large detectors to see this. Now, 2 weeks ago, he came to my office at CERN and gave me, in some ways, an even more pessimistic viewpoint. It gets worse all the time, apparently, with this guy. So here are those plots I just showed you, those numbers. Here in this paper, which I have a copy of, if you like one, he talks about the upper and the lower limits for WIMPs. I don't understand what this purple is, frankly. But anyway, whatever it is, you see, he says now, and I think other people have more or less agreed with this, even though in the last talk there was something similar to this, that in fact the cross-sections could be enormously small, or we might be very lucky and even stumble into it in the near future. But remember, I said the preferred values in those calculations are still in this region. And at the end of my talk, I'll show you how liquid xenon detectors of various kinds, which are either running now or are being built or planning, could actually get into this region. Now, liquid xenon is a rather remarkable material. Some of you probably don't know this, but the first excimer laser was actually built in the then Soviet Union using liquid xenon. Now, these systems that people use in these noble gas liquids are essentially bound states of ions and atoms. They're very metastable. This is an intrinsic semiconductor. We don't put any dopant into this thing like sodium iodide or things like that. And these are enormously powerful scintillators because they give you as much scintillation light as sodium iodide that you do have to dope. Xenon is very massive. It's also available in the atmosphere, although somewhat expensive. You could imagine someday building up to 10-ton detectors in principle. The no long-lived isotopes. You can drift electrons in this if you can get rid of the oxygen. And we've drifted up to milliseconds in these systems. The light yield is extremely high. And as I said, the excimer process is extremely well understood. So this is a medium that if we want to look for something exotic like WIMPs, we understand the medium rather well from literally decades of study. Now, essentially what happens is if a WIMP or it hits a nuclei or we have a beta decay or something like that, we have initial sort of excitation light from the scintillation light. And then if there are any electrons, we can actually drift these electrons, and these electrons then will again give this excitation light when they collide, let's say, where we've drifted them to. And so you can actually get two kinds of signals, and these signals are very fast. In fact, they're much faster than sodium iodide, so in fact, this allows you to use pulse shape discrimination. I'll show you how that's working in Zeppelin 1. Now, our own group, working with other people in Icarus, have carried out a series of studies. We started out by something very simple in 1990, just a small device with a phototube, some liquid xenon. Here's a source. We put electric field across this. We immediately saw the alpha particles and gammas give you very different signatures. This is a primary, and this is a secondary, and this is about a microsecond because we put electric field here. So these are the electrons drifting and then being collected. Whereas if we have a gamma ray, we have a very small primary and a very large secondary. So you can see right away the signature there gives you information about the nature of the event. We then went on to build a 2-kilogram detector. I won't bore you with all the details. This was written up in a number of places. And we took this detector to a neutron beam in Italy. And we actually showed this is the neutron signal. These are gamma ray signals. So we showed clearly that there was a separation, but the separation was not very useful. Nevertheless, we could tell the difference between the two. We then converted that detector into essentially a 1-kilogram detector. We put in one more feature here, which is a very small volume of gas here, so that the electrons, as they drift out of the material here, go into the gas, and you get a large electroluminescence because of the acceleration system here, sort of a cascading process. That's the detector we built. And in this detector, we showed that you actually had discrimination. Now, you've seen plots like this before in the Edelweiss talk. They use phonons and ionization. We use secondary, primary versus secondary, but, and it's the same kind of concept. Down here is where the WIMPs would lie, or neutron recoils. This is where the background would be. So I think we demonstrated successfully that this method has discrimination and can be used to build a WIMP detector. Okay, so then let me go on to the second part of my talk to discuss. Here's the collaboration, which is building several of these detectors, Zeppelin 1, Zeppelin 2, Zeppelin 3, and hopefully someday even something we call Zeppelin 4, which is a one-ton detector. And the two key people is Hongo Wang from UCLA and Nigel Smith, at least for my talk today, from Rutherford Lab. Now, where are we going to do this experiment? Unfortunately, in this country, except for the facility at Sudan, we don't have any decent underground laboratories. But the British have put a rather large investment into a site. This is from a Nature article recently, into a site in Yorkshire called the Bowlby site. This is a potash mine. It's an interesting mine because the potash vein actually goes from northern England all the way to Hamburg, Germany. And this mine is following this, following the potash under the North Sea. So presumably in 100 years, you come back, this thing will be halfway to Germany. Fortunately, our detector is not under the North Sea, but part of this mine is under the North Sea. Recently, the British got a rather nice level of funding to, rather than just using sort of a mining structure, it actually built a real underground laboratory there. This is looking a little bit like the Grand Sasso, not nearly as elegant as the Grand Sasso, but here you can see the cutting machine. And so we now have, there's now a laboratory there where all these detectors will go. It's about 3,500 meter water equivalent, so it's rather deep compared to, and it's also a salt structure, so there's very little uranium thorium in the walls. Zeppelin 1 is only 4 kilograms, but it's a beautiful little detector. The basic idea is this 4-kilogram detector, 3.7 kilograms, is viewed by 3 phototubes. Now, to get the ultraviolet light out, 172 nanometers, we have to put in quartz windows. And what is done here with these 3 phototubes, you essentially trigger on 1 or 2 photoelectrons in a tube, and then simply sample what you see, and then you measure for each event the pulse height and pulse shape you would get from each of these phototubes. And I'll show you some of those plots in a moment. Here is the detector being constructed in the site, and there's also be a lead shield and so forth, which I won't have time to show you pictures of. Okay, now, here is a sort of fiducial cut plot that we usually, as we talk in particle physics, we usually talk about making a fiducial cut to make certain we're not near the edges. So here we plot the 3 phototubes, eventually the normalized amplitude in each phototube. We have a three-angle plot here, and inside this region here is something that's going to be very close to the middle of the detector, and essentially this constitutes a fiducial volume. You can see even here, an experiment like this is extremely well shielded, extremely pure, deep underground. There's still a huge counting rate. So these are backgrounds that all the experiments have to encounter, looking for these very sensitive signals. So, as I told you before, liquid xenon has this very fast time structure. So one has put neutrons into, we've also, a number of groups have done this, our group has also done this, measure what a nuclear recoil looks like. Now, nuclear recoil will have a mean time around 18 nanoseconds, whereas an ordinary gamma ray of the same energy, roughly, would have a mean time of about 30 nanoseconds. This is effectively because of the range of these things. The nuclear recoil really doesn't go anywhere. Whereas the photon makes, it gives an electron that goes some distance. And so one is looking then for some kind of structure around 18 nanoseconds. Here's all the data to recently, and you see there's not even a hint of a structure here. So there's no hint whatsoever of any signal yet. And here's the current limit. And the projected limit, this I understand is what will be shown in September, which is very close to what we saw from Edelweiss. And of course, this experiment will run for a couple more years and can go a little bit further down. Now, after that, over the next year, that experiment will be phased out. Another detector will be phased in, the one we're building. We call that Zeppelin 2. It's a collaboration of UCLA, Texas A&M, and some Italian groups and the UK Dark Matter. And this is sort of just a schematic of what the detector looks like. It has all these phototubes now looking down on the 40 kilograms of 30 kilogram fiducial volume of liquid xenon. And in this region right here, we have the drift space where the electrons get amplified and we get the electroluminescence, which we then detect with the phototubes. This detector is under construction at UCLA, and by the end of the year, will be shipped to the Rutherford lab. Here's what the detector will look like. All these parts are coming together. You can see what it will look like with the vacuum vessel, and when you put the top on, we get the signals out. And here are the phototubes, and this would be the active volume. This is essentially all constructed. So this detector would go in the same shield that I showed you before. Now there's some interesting features of this shield. Let me dwell a little bit on this, because it's also important for the future. This shield, or shields like this, which are made of liquid scintillator, play various roles. For example, one of the biggest backgrounds of an experiment like this are photons or particles coming out of the photocathode material. Although you can make the liquid very pure and the walls very pure, phototubes are rather dirty materials. So now if a neutron were to come out, let's say uranium and thorium in the phototube, if a neutron were to come out, in principle that neutron scattering here would not be absorbed, would perhaps go on and be counted outside here. So there's some discussion about putting some additional neutron absorber out here, like gadolinium, things like that. So in other words, one way to think of this, even though we're very deep, is to get rid of some of these backgrounds by actually tagging outgoing neutrons. We already tag outgoing photons, which if I had time, I would explain to you how that works in Zeppelin 1. And so this shield and shields like this are going to play an increasingly important role in these experiments. Now, how well does this experiment do, or will this experiment do? So this is sort of our way of, we've seen this plot in other talks, but it's sort of our way of talking about this. Here, these are a number of sort of outdated models of WIMPs, which Rick Gaskill made this pretty plot, so we keep using it. Basically, Zeppelin 1 has reached this level, essentially. It's essentially consistent with Edelweiss and having ruled out Dom, at least at this level. Zeppelin 2, which will start running next year, over a few years, will reach this level, and you see that's comparable and perhaps a little bit worse than CDMS2 at Sudan. Then the next step for this group is what we call Zeppelin 4. We'll just talk about that for a second before I finish. So the next step is to go on to 1 ton. All detector groups seem to have this goal, but in some sense, xenon, one of the great virtues of xenon, it's readily available and can be upgraded easily. And so one thing, we've collaborated with a group of Princeton and others in this country, proposing a very large 1 ton detector with a large number of phototubes, essentially this size. It's really not enormous. Thank you. It's really not enormous on the scale of particle physics experiments. I mean, some of us are now talking about many kilotons of detectors, liquid argon detectors, for example, for neutrino experiments. And so on that scale, this is still a very small operation. And if the experience we will get from Zeppelin 2 would teach us whether this is feasible. Some few people feel we should break this up into pieces, zoned somehow. Other people, like our group, feel we might just build a very simple device based on Zeppelin 2, and this would then get us to the 1 ton region. There's one more interesting feature of liquid xenon, which we may use, which was the subject of the student of mine at UCLA recently. The basic idea is we may put a plate in this system. Here's a little plate we built. This is a group that is proposing this bigger detector. At least study it. This is a plate we coat with cesium iodide. Now, when an ultraviolet photon hits this plate, the electron then follows this electric field lines, then comes out, and then goes into the drifts out of the xenon into the electroluminescence region and gives a big signal. So this actually provides an amplification because this efficiency is much higher for getting this electron out into the electroluminescence than for detecting that photon directly with a low photocathode efficiency and things like that. So this actually gives you an amplification of the signal, not just the background, but the signal. This would allow us to reduce our threshold considerably and allow us to, and this is sort of the field lines which we mapped, which is in this. So we have built a model, we've built a small version of this in Geneva and actually tested it, although we tested only with gas for the time being, and we've shown that we get amplification factors between 20 and 100. So that's this you can view as a sort of improvement of Zeppelin 2. In other words, after we run Zeppelin 2 for a while, we come back and put this plate into Zeppelin 2, arrange these field lines this way, and then see if we can get the amplification of the signal. Now, there are many other, this is essentially what our group has been doing, our group with the group in England. There are many other groups, or at least some other groups, talking and designing and even running liquid xenon detectors. This is just a partial list. There is the infamous DAMA group, which actually have 7 kilograms of very enriched liquid xenon, which is probably very expensive, with no discrimination, essentially no results. They've essentially never published anything significant, even for their own limits, for example, to test it on possibilities. In other words, this is a beautiful, I wish I could get my hands on this xenon because it's enriched and very expensive, but they won't give it to us. So they claim they're still running it. There is a variation on what we call, what I talked about Zeppelin 2 a moment ago, called Zeppelin 3, which is also being constructed in the UK. The basic idea is that after Zeppelin 1, Zeppelin 2, and Zeppelin 3 all run, we will have a complete understanding of how the xenon phenomenon works. Then we can go on and design Zeppelin 4. That's at least our viewpoint. Now, Zeppelin 3 differs from Zeppelin 2 in that we'll have very high electric field. The electric field may be large enough to actually pull out some electrons from the recoil nucleus, not just the background as we've used it before. However, this includes, there's lots of problems because if you have a very high field, you can get bubbles, you can get boiling, you can get all kinds of problems in this thing, which we have never encountered ourselves because we've always run our detectors at low field. So the Imperial College group plus other members of the UK Dark Matter group are actually building this. It's a small detector, but it's really in some ways a test detector. If you could also get the electrons out of the recoil, or ionization out of the recoil, it gives you one more handle on the WIMPs to allow you perhaps to detect and prove conclusively that you're seeing a signal. Another detector which is being designed and studied by our friends from Columbia, Ellen Aprile, and so, who actually worked with us many years ago in Icarus, would be a test for a one-ton detector, and uses similar ideas but has some interesting variations, and that's R&D is going on with that. And finally, the Japanese are designing a huge detector for liquid xenon, but this detector is mainly for solar neutrinos, and the dark matter search is sort of an afterthought. This would be several tons of liquid xenon, and I don't know the status of that, but they're planning it. So let me just conclude my talk by showing you the wonders of liquid xenon. It's really amazing stuff. And every time you go, when you go to your doctor and get an excimer laser, remember that's liquid xenon was the first. Thank you.